Chris Christie, in October, repeated his assertion he was not interested in running for the GOP nomination for the presidency. Christie said what he means and what he means and means what he said. Why was that so hard for the media and political supporters to understand? He kept getting the question, will he run? Bill Smith, our history doctor, is here with me. And what do you make of this Chris Christie, I will not run story?
Well, aside from the obvious that you mentioned, that if a man says he's not going to do something and repeats he's not going to do something, yet you continue to ask him if he's going to do something, that somehow that's going to become a story. What Chris Christie gets is the William Sherman Award for not becoming the 21st century edition of the classic flip-flop politician. And I think that's why the question continued to be asked, because there were those that wanted to draft Christie, and there were those that figured, even though he's a straight talker, he's charismatic, he's still a politician.
Because how many times have we heard politicians asked, no, 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 and then, well, here we go.
Read my lips.
Yes.
No new taxes.
And you bring up William Sherman because he has that famous quote.
Yes. The Republican Party had tried to get the Union hero of the war to come out of retirement and run for president in 1884. Of course, for those that did not grow up in the South and learn that William Tecumseh Sherman was essentially the Antichrist for his ability to roll through the South and as a major Union general, and I'm being facetious, because he was one of the geniuses, again, from the Union perspective, of managing the closing years of the Civil War, and made it quite clear that this is going to end with his huge movements across the country.
Full disclosure, my great-great-great-grandfather, Gideon Kellams, marched with Sherman.
Well, there you are,
yeah. You
see. I suspect that some of my great-great-great-grandfathers marched against Sherman.
And here we sit.
In full disclosure. And yet, here we sit. Now, Sherman has retired in 1883 from his position as the general of the army. He is the commanding general of the army, one of the last great Civil War heroes still in uniform by that time. And the Republicans were adamant that they wanted to try to have this well-spoken, charismatic, cut-and-dried, is it sounding like Chris Christie, individual be their standard bearer. He was, without a doubt, clear, and this becomes one of the great political lines. As a matter of fact, it's almost referred to as Sherman-esque. I will not accept if nominated, and I will not serve if elected.
It's the second half that really lets you know, even if you go about electing me, I'm not going to accept this.
Exactly, because there has been a history in American politics of drafting candidates, and sometimes against their own initial desire. Now, as you point out, they often come around, but every once in a while, there's a William Sherman, and now in our day and age, a Chris Christie that, no, I meant it. I don't want to run right now.
Was this, though, a situation where it was very easy to say no to this draft movement, which had to be much of an ego stroke, but it was easy because he figured I wouldn't get elected?
Well, to say the least, in our modern political terminology, Sherman would have had high negatives.
Yes, yes.
Remember, not only had he used total war, the scorched earth strategy in the South, notably in Atlanta and in the March to the Sea, he had also overseen the Indian Wars with similar total warfare approach, once commenting that the Sioux should be exterminated and advising that during attack, soldiers need not distinguish between male or female, young or old. Now, he didn't originate the phrase, but often many people take that to say that line of kill them all and let the good Lord sort them out. That's a 20th century quote. What he was famous for, though, was being a great speech giver, being a colorful individual. So this is why the GOP was so interested in him. And in his speech to the Michigan Military Academy, he gives us one of those other great Sherman quotes, war is hell. Now, the irony of William Sherman is that for all of the destruction he wrought, he was quite filled with angst, it appeared, about the result and what he had to do. He essentially did his job. He was a good soldier in that way. Now, in that great political sense and our legends, when people go back and look at that military academy speech in Michigan, might not have been exactly what he said. There were some lines very close to war is hell, but that's what the public perception was.
Now, Richard Nixon, right, when he was vice president, and he said, "You won't the press, you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore." So he was gone. He was out of politics.
No, that's right. He famously made that declaration not after the 60 defeat, mm-hmm. when John F. Kennedy won in a narrowest of narrow elections. It was the 1962 governor's race for California, which many around Nixon believed was going to be a layup. After all, he was the leading Republican. He had not been a petulant loser in that 60 presidential race. But losing California, his home state, where he had been a House of Representative member, where he had so many close ties, this hurt him deeply. And of course, as Richard Nixon often did, he blamed the press with that famous quote. He volunteered it. It wasn't that he was asked it. And it was an impromptu press conference that he walked out for, saying, "You won't have Nixon to kick around anymore because, gentlemen, this is my last press conference." And yes, indeed, he spoke of himself in the third person.
But as everyone knows, he was back for 68, not that long.
It didn't take very long for Richard Nixon to decide to rehabilitate himself, and he did it by working for other GOP candidates through the 64 presidential cycle and, the, more importantly, the 66 congressional cycle, giving speeches, going to fundraisers, helping GOP candidates, building himself a base, and turning himself from the somewhat radioactive ex-candidate into an elder statesman mm-hmm. of the party, measured, Mr. Republican, and was able to get away from his quote, "I don't know." Perhaps that sounds maybe a little bit like another current GOP candidate who shortly after Chris Christie said, "No, I mean it. I'm not running," as Sarah Palin stepped forward and say, "You betcha, I'm not going to be running this time." But what has Sarah Palin? She's almost taking the Richard Nixon playbook. And let's see if her plan isn't to try to come back around, not unlike Richard Nixon did in 68.
We've talked about a lot of Republican figures here. Chris Christie, General Sherman the Republicans wanted, Dick Nixon, Sarah Palin.
Well, you know, it does give the sort of the appearance of being a GOP problem. But let's not forget the once and future independent candidate, perhaps the champion of this flip-flop, none other than Ross Perot.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he came out and said his supporters, I had to, would only draft him, get him on the ballot in 50 states, he would run for president, Larry, on Larry King Live, you know, mm-hmm. the quintessential public announcement. You know, as it gets peeled back later, it wasn't just a mysterious, like, "I decided today." It had been in the works for a while. But he took advantage of a wave in 1992 of concern about the economy, concern about the country, and rode that to the polling lead, as much as 39% in some of the national polls. Then he made his Icarus move, mm-hmm. flying too close to the sun there. The wax got a little loose. The feathers started to fall. He began to fire members of his political staff, members of political staff. Ed Rollins, notably, yes. GOP strategist, quit over some of these things. He began to tumble in the polls. He began to misstep in the media. He went to 25%. He went to 20%. And it's at that point that he declared that he was out of the race.
He's done.
He's done. I'm not going to run. And then at first, when they asked and said, "Well, I don't want the election to end up in the House of Representatives," but pressed, he admitted that it was all about his fear that the Bush campaign was going to leak doctored photographs of his daughter to ruin his daughter's wedding. There was the implication that Ed Rollins had been a CIA plant inside of his campaign, and Ross Perot was looking nuttier than a fruitcake. He is gone from the election.
And then he's back.
Yes. And sort of a compression of the Dick Nixon rehabilitation.
Yeah. I mean,
within 5 weeks.
Yeah.
He's back and ends up, you know, garnering one of the best showings for an independent candidate in raw numbers since Teddy Roosevelt in 1912. But he didn't win a single electoral vote. Strom Thurmond, as a third-party candidate,
the
did
Dixie
better.
Krat, right?
Yeah, this yeah. Dixiecrat did better than Ross Perot. But, you know, there's not only a hesitancy to get in. If you people will draft me, then I'm going to quit. Then I'm back. And, of course, he tried again in 96, but the flip-flop. He never got over that.
So where does this leave us with the sitting governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie?
Well, you know, Christie is in really pretty good shape. He, once again, said what he meant what he said. So he didn't say he wouldn't run later. And to take the GOP analogy out again, in 1948, both parties actually came calling to a straight-talking, quiet administrator of a little place called Columbia University. Mm-hmm. Wanted to know if the president of Columbia would be interested in representing their respective parties. Well, recently retired from his last gig, you may have heard of it, commander-in-chief of all forces for the Allied invasion of Europe, Dwight D. Eisenhower, demurred. But he didn't shut the door. So in 52, when a draft Eisenhower movement began, he reluctantly, and I think in some measure was genuine in it, assented to the run for president, became the GOP candidate in 52, won in a landslide, and of course was reelected in 56.
Well, you've given me another GOP example, and there's also precedent for the governor of New Jersey, isn't there?
Well, indeed there is, because you think about it, the last time that there was some turmoil in the country and a large new movement that had crossed political lines was the early 20th century when you had the progressives. There were progressive Democrats, there were progressive Republicans. Everybody wanted to see reform. There wanted to be change. And one of the great progressives of the era, a two-term president at the end of that time frame for America, was none other than the former Princeton president and sitting governor of New Jersey, right, Woodrow Wilson. While he was not strictly drafted to the job, he was a bit of a compromise candidate for the Democrats back in 1912, in the era in which primaries weren't still weren't strong at all, and it was still about the convention. So, you know, there's great precedent for Chris Christie because he did not do the Nixon thing and say never. He was firm in his Sherman-like resolve, but did not say I will never serve. Who knows what happens in the next electoral cycle for Mr. Christie?
Safe to say most of the people we've talked about here won't have nearly as many memorable quotes, though, as Sherman.
No, and, well, I have to admit that this is somewhat of a shameless attempt to work another Sherman quote in, because he's one of our best quotes that's not a president. He was a great speaker. He was making quite a living of sorts after his career, going around speaking, because, you know, there wasn't any TV to go on and make appearances. You went town to town to town. One of the things that Sherman wrote, though, that I think kind of, you know, sums him up in another way is everybody has this image of General Sherman's march to the sea, ruthless, terrible. And yes, he was a ruthless commander and ruthless in pursuing. But I don't think this man really had a heart of that, because this is one of his quotes that he wrote in a personal letter shortly after the Confederate surrender, but before the complete finalization of the Appomattox surrender. I confess, Sherman wrote, without shame, I am sick and tired of fighting. It's glory and all moonshine. 'Tis only those who have never heard a shot, never heard the shrieks and groans of the wounded, the lacerated, that cry aloud for more blood, more vengeance, or more desolation.
Well, until you and I march to the sea,
we're history.